Good morning and welcome to Occupy the Airwaves. Okay, what we are seeing now is as their proxy war in Ukraine is starting to fail, they are turning to other countries, for instance, Armenia and Georgia. So I thought we could talk about Georgia today. I've got two things. One is Scott Ritter, whose wife is Georgian, talking about how what the U.S. is doing in Georgia and also applying it to how they do in other countries. And then Garland Nixon talks about how they did it in Nicaragua. And then the next one is a article written, I think, by Georgian communists. That's the impression I get, although they don't really sound like it, but they're talking about the welfare of the people and all that. So I don't know. It kind of sounds kind of communist to me, because who talks about the welfare of the people except for in a ironic propaganda way? So anyhow, we're going to start out with Scott Ritter and Garland Nixon and then move on to the other one.
All right, Scott, let's start here. Lots going on. Protests in Georgia. And, you know, I remember seeing this in Nicaragua. Nicaragua wrote a bill that was almost identical. In some ways, they literally lifted the information from the U.S. FARA law, Foreign Agents Registration Act law, right? They put it in and the U.S. says, oh my gosh, you can't possibly do that. That is unfair. But they passed it. And then they said to all of these NGOs, you have to tell us where you're getting your money. And this was in Nicaragua. A whole bunch of ones that happened to be getting money from CIA-related groups said, no, we're not going to do it. And Nicaragua said, well, then you can't run for office. They arrested some of them for failing to comply with the law. And the U.S. said, oh my God, you're violating their Georgia. What's happening there, Scott Ritter? Just wanted to tell that little story about Nicaragua to get a little hypocritical background. Scott Ritter.
For all of you who missed the Maidan coup back in February 2014, who were otherwise distracted and didn't understand what was happening until it happened, we are seeing a complete replay of the Maidan events today as we speak, unfolding in real time in the nation of Georgia, the Republic of Georgia. You know, Georgia had a George Soros-sponsored coup d'etat back in 2004, I believe. They called it the Rose Revolution. This is where Mikhail Saakashvili came in and removed Edward Shevardnadze from power. And Saakashvili ruled for about 8 years. In 2008, pressured by the United States government, Saakashvili launched an invasion of South Ossetia, a Georgian territory that there had been the equivalent of a civil war. It was now had separated itself from Georgia, even though it was legally part of Georgia. Russian peacekeepers were there. And actually in July of 2008, Saakashvili was engaged with, at that time, President Dmitry Medvedev of Russia about the return of South Ossetia and Abkhazia, what would be needed. The Russians made clear that one of the things that would be needed is that Georgia doesn't join NATO. It's like, you know, guys, we do have a little bit of leverage here. If you want these territories back, then we have to ensure that the country that gets these territories doesn't turn around and become a threat to us. Because we know that as long as we control these countries and keep them away from you, you can't ever join NATO, because NATO won't you in if you have an ongoing territorial dispute. And Saakashvili was listening and realizing that that was the direction. And Condoleezza Rice flew in and had a meeting with him and basically said, cease all your meetings with Medvedev. We built this wonderful military for you. Why don't you start using it? And Saakashvili went, you mean you want me to invade South Ossetia? And she said, we've built this wonderful military for you. Why don't you start using it? He said, oh, I'm going to invade South Ossetia. And he did. And 4 days later, he surrendered because Russia turned around and kicked his ass. And then he blamed Condoleezza Rice. It was an interesting press conference where he sat there and he went, you know, you told us to invade. And we said no such thing. We did no such thing. He's like, you told me to invade, and you abandoned me. Thank you very much. That's what happens. And from that moment on, Saakashvili sort of broke and he became almost dictatorial. He started arresting political opponents, shutting the system down. In 2012, he was booted from power. A guy named Bidzina Ivanishvili came in. He's a businessman, a billionaire, made his money in Russia, came in and he won presidency. And he started to take Georgia away from this, because in 2008, the United States and NATO invited Georgia into NATO, which sort of irritated the Russians. And then they began their joining the European Union. And Ivanishvili went, you know, we can do that, but we don't want to surrender our country to the West, because that's a dangerous thing that happens. We need to maintain Georgian sovereignty. And they had a political party called Georgia Dream. And Georgia Dream was about saying, hey, we got all this Western money coming in, and it's taking over everything. And it wasn't that they're against the EU, but understand how soft power works. USAID, the United States Agency for International Development, oversees this budget. They do things such as diversity inclusion programs. So they create non-governmental organizations and society groups who come in and there. It's about diversity inclusion. Now, again, this means gays, transgenders, the whole LGBTQ thing. As American, fine. In America, our society says this is what it's all about, baby. Diversity, inclusion, we're there. In Georgia, it doesn't work that way. Very conservative society. So why does the United States want to come in? Why are we imposing ourselves on them? Because what we do, we're mobilizing at the grassroots level a different political dynamic. Because then after we do that, the next wave of money that comes in is we politicize this. We've created them. We turn them into political parties. And we start taking control of the electoral process. We say that in order for a party to be in, you have to have diversity to be legitimate as a party. And then we come in. It's fascinating. The last thing is always disinformation management. How do we control disinformation? Because you know there's a whole bunch of people out there, those Russians and everybody, who are trying to destroy what's happening here in Georgia. Meanwhile, the conservative Georgians are going, there ain't any Russians here. They're just us. We don't like this. No, no, no. Speaking out against this is misinformation, and it must be shut down. So we're going to train your media. We're going to take over your media. We're going to give everybody the dollars. We're going to inject you with the dollar heroin. So everybody now has this money and they're able to run around. And the conservative Georgians are going, we don't like this. You're taking over our government from the bottom up. And it's a very sneaky way that you're doing it. And so Georgia Green last year, they've won 3 consecutive elections. And the European Union, the United States have determined the Georgia Dream has to go because Georgia Dream is, of course, what's stopping. That's the cap at the top that's stopping this ground up push to take over Georgia. Why do we want to take over Georgia? We want a second front. We want Georgia to open up a second front to distract Russia, divert Russian resources, weaken Russia, etc. Georgia Dream is sitting there going, are you high? Do you remember what the Russians did to us in 2008? In 4 days, they destroyed us. Had they gone
the population of Georgia, it's what, 8, 10 million, something like that.
Oh, good Lord, no, 3.5 million.
They Georgia, there's a speed bump. They just want to sacrifice those people.
They just want to sacrifice everybody. So the Georgians are like, we don't want to do this. Georgian Dream are saying, we don't want to do this. Meanwhile, you have all these other people going, but it's NATO. NATO will be there for us. It's the European Union. They'll enrich us. And Georgia Dream's going, look at Ukraine. Look at Ukraine. We don't want that here. That's not what we want. They passed sanctions against Russia after Russia went into Ukraine. And Georgia Dream said, we're not participating in these sanctions. And you know what happened last year? While all of Europe's economy is doing this, the Georgian economy grew by 10.2%, 2 consecutive years of solid growth. And the reason why? They didn't sanction Russia. Pro hint. Don't sanction Russia. We will do well. So Georgia Dream is saying no, but now they have an election coming up and they found out. Just because you receive American money doesn't make you smart. And they found out inadvertently by one of the political opponents that the only reason why she was able to compete in a mayoral election was that she had received a huge grant from the European Union's Endowment for Democracy, which is illegal. If you read the Georgian laws, the laws on the parliament, if you're a political party, you can't receive money from a foreign nation. Now, what they do to hide that is they create non-governmental organizations that support, sort of like political action committees, and then they receive a large amount of money, and then they indirectly support the party. And that's one thing that happens. But here, she actually received a huge block of money that made it possible. And Georgia Dream's going, you can't do that. And then Georgia Dream said, we want to know how much money you've received. And they went, we're not telling you. So they said, well, then we're going to pass a law. The same kind of law they have in the United States, the same kind of law the European Union has, the same kind of law Russia put in place to control the CIA, MI6, using NGOs to empower Navalny and other people of that nature. We're going to pass that law, so you have to declare. Now, here's the interesting thing about the law. It's illegal for a political party to receive the money. So that has to stop. If it's happening, that has to stop. You're in violation of the law. It's not illegal for an NGO to receive the money. This law does not prohibit the money from coming in. The law doesn't say you can't. All it says is you have to declare it. And if it's over 20%, you have to register as a foreign agent. But here's the thing. If you do that, all the Georgians out there, you know, in rural Georgia, because these NGOs come in and say, hi, I'm a Georgian NGO, and I'm here to help you because I'm a Georgian. I'm patriotic Georgian. I want to help you. We know best. Let us help you. And the Georgians out in the rural areas are going, oh, that's nice. A Georgian's trying to help us. But now if they go, well, wait a minute. I just saw that you're getting 60% of your money from the United States and the meetings got published. You're not here for Georgia. You're here to promote American or European Union stuff. We're not there yet. We don't want that. And so last year, when they tried to pass this law, the people took to the streets and they were successful. The Georgian Dream Party didn't anticipate the result. Suddenly you have hundreds of thousands of people demonstrating the streets. So they pulled the plug. They said, we're done on that law. But Georgia Dream, there's an election in October. And Georgia Dream is very concerned. Right now, if you take a look at the polls, Georgia Dream is doing quite well. They've gone down a little bit. They're still above 50%, which means they're going to win the election. The National Unity Movement, or the next party, Saakashvili's old political party, they're hovering down in the 20%, and then everybody else is below that. There's a big push right now to get money into this election to skew that even more. And so the European Union, the United States, is just pouring money into Georgia, pouring money, buying political parties. And Georgia is a relatively impoverished state. So suddenly when you have people with a lot of money, they're just out there throwing money around, and they're buying votes, and they're doing this, and they're doing that. But the whole purpose is to replace Georgia Dream, to get a government in place whose first action will be to open a second front, to go in that direction, all under the false promise that they're going to be allowed to be a member of NATO eventually in the European Union. Again, I'll tell the people of Georgia the same thing I told the people of Ukraine over and over again. You will never be a member of the European Union, and you will never be a member of NATO. They don't like you. They don't want you. They don't need you except to have you open a second front. In this case, they will sacrifice you. That's all this is about, is sacrificing Georgia. So Georgia Dream smartly said, we have to stop this. So they this time did their homework. They said, okay, we know what's going to happen. We're going to put this law out there. Let's make sure we have the votes. Because last time when they put it out there, a lot of people saw the demonstrations in the streets and went, hey, I'm not voting for this. I'm a little nervous. There's a lot of Georgians in the street. I don't want to do this. This time they got everybody in. They said, there's going to be demonstrations in the street. We have to stand fast. We have to stop this coup d'etat from taking place, because it is a soft power coup to buy political parties. So Georgia Dream got the votes. And then they started the process, and they knew what was going to happen. Well, the playbook that's being played out right now, because everybody knew that this law was going to be passed. They were not going to stop this law from being passed. So they start the mobilization. They get NATO and the European Union and the United States threaten the entire nation of Georgia that if you don't suppress this vote, we will pull the plug and you will lose everything that you've ever gotten. And so they get people in the streets. Georgia Dream was smart. They had the police lined up. Last time the police were like, what the hell? The cops didn't want to be there. So now they have the cops prepared. They have a strategy. They have the units practice their tactics. So the cops were able to hold back the crowd. The vote finally passed yesterday. It's there. It's law now. But now what's happening? Phase two. They're going to try and shut down Tbilisi, they being the opposition. They're building barricades as we speak. And this should send a shiver through everybody's spine, because this is what they did in Kyiv.
Yep.
And once you establish the barricades, you create a wall. And then from there, it gets to the next level. The president of Georgia is not Georgia Dream. She's actually a French citizen. Now, she's the commander in chief. And the Georgian military from top to bottom has been trained by the United States. She gave a speech where she said the Georgian soldiers cannot forget who trained them. And when the time comes, the Georgian soldiers may have to intervene. And the prime minister said, that's treason.
Okay, that was a great overview of how NGOs destroy a country from Scott Ritter and Garland Nixon, who are Americans looking at it, from the experience of, especially Scott, of working in the U.S. government intelligence, and he knows why and how the United States will overthrow other countries. So now we're going to look at it from the viewpoint of the Georgians on the ground, and this is an article, Unrest in Georgia Over Foreign Influence Transparency Law, and it's from lefteast.org, and this is going to talk about seeing it from their point of view. There is a massive problem at the heart of Georgia's peculiar political economy. It goes back a quarter of a century, predating the 2003 Rose Revolution. That also, as Scott said, was also a U.S. instigated revolution where they overthrew the elected government. The late President Edward Shevardnadze had given foreign agencies great leeway, so toward the end of his feckless and corrupt rule, NGOs were already a vocal presence in the country's political discourse and maintained confident relationships with international donors. Remember, there's only 3.5 million people in Georgia, and they have 25,000 NGOs there. You think the United States wants to get their hands on Georgia government? Just look at it. Georgia is on the other side of the Black Sea from Ukraine, on Russia's a different part of the border. Of course the United States wants to get their hands on Georgia's government again. They want to use it to destroy Russia. Right back to the article. After years of turmoil and state collapse, Georgians with ideas and convictions had seized the moment to shape their society. It felt fresh, energetic, if driven more by social entrepreneurs than broad-based grassroots movements. Okay, again, this was a U.S.-backed coup. These Georgians don't quite get that that one was a coup. After Shevardnadze's former Minister of Justice, Mikhail Saakashvili, deposed him in the Rose Revolution, NGO professionals quickly filled senior government posts. The country's policy space was thrown wide open to any and all foreign-led aid and reform experiments. The calculation behind this was that the net geopolitical and material benefits would far outweigh any drawbacks. And then I just want to point out that the people at the bottom of these color revolutions, they don't get what they're participating in. To them, it's fun to get out there and demonstrate and, oh man, this government sucks. We want a new government. It's going to be great. And they're waving their little signs and they're chanting and the NGOs are providing them with, you know, tents and food and all kinds of stuff. And it's all very exciting to the people on the bottom who don't realize who's paying for it and who's directing it and who's orchestrating it. And then comes the new government, as the people of Ukraine and Georgia could tell you, doesn't always work out the way they hoped. Okay, consistently high foreign aid flows followed, and bilateral aid programs, the World Bank, UN agencies, international development aid groups, small and large, and even private Western philanthropies opened well-staffed offices in Tbilisi to spend all their money, implement their projects, and tick the box saying consultation and collaboration with the community. They all needed local NGOs. Today, more than 25,000 NGOs are registered in Georgia. According to Georgian authorities, 90% of their funding comes from abroad, but this average conceals that the vast majority of Georgian NGOs have no local funding at all. They would probably find the very notion of asking locals for money absurd, and if they gave it a try in their current shape and form, they could hardly win fellow Georgians' support. So in other words, this law says if the NGO gets more than 20% of their funding from foreign agencies, they have to declare it. So Americans tend to think that means that these NGOs are only 20% funded by foreign agencies, but no. They're 90% funded, and in most cases, 100% funded. Just because the law says if it's over 20%, you have to declare it, doesn't mean that, you know, the AID or the NED or Open Society, whatever group is in there handing them money, that doesn't mean they're only giving them 20% of their budget. As they point out, Georgians are poor. They're not getting their money from grassroots support, as our NGOs like to pretend, right? They're getting their money from foreign agencies. So there you go. Foreign agencies and their local NGO contractors have long colonized most areas of public policy and services, education, healthcare, court reform, rural development, infrastructure, etc. In practice, this plays out something like this. A major development aid agency or international lender, for example, USAID, the European Commission, or World Bank, has come up with a new model for education reform, which it now plans to roll out not just in Georgia, but typically in a whole host of countries. To give it a veneer of community participation, the aid agency contacts Georgian NGOs to do the everyday footwork. Introduce this or that new way of doing things to officials, schools, and teachers, and train them in the new skills they supposedly need. No one at this or any other point asks teachers, parents, students, or for that matter, the electorate at large, what they need and want and how they would improve things. People are left feeling unheard, ignored, patronized, and also inadequate when they fail to meet the benchmarks all this training was supposed to achieve. No Child Left Behind or Race to the Top, sound familiar? The Georgian NGOs that are given grants to implement this work may be local, but they hold considerable power over the Georgian population. This power comes from their access to Western embassies and resources and the legitimacy this conveys, rather than from grassroots support. In a functional democracy, the people elect lawmakers and the executive to serve them and represent their interests. In Georgia, unelected NGOs get their mandate from international bodies, which draw up and pay for to-do lists of policy reforms for Georgia. Local NGOs lack an incentive to consider the impact of the projects they implement because they are not accountable to the citizens in whose lives they play such an instructive role. This constellation has eroded Georgian citizens' agency and the country's sovereignty and democracy. However, the draft law on foreign influence transparency will not address this massive problem at the heart of Georgia's political economy. It is not even intended to address this problem. The Georgian government doesn't really care about Georgia's sovereignty, and neither do the foreign donors and aid agencies, nor the Georgian NGO elite. Georgian Dream, the party that has been in power since 2012, has no intention to eradicate all foreign funding from the Georgian political economy. Quite the contrary. Now, again, this is Georgians, how they look at it. These people clearly do not like Georgia Dream. So keep that in mind. Quite the contrary, they are perfectly happy with the continued flow of foreign aid and how the donor NGO industrial complex turns out policies and sort of services. Georgia's politics may be notoriously polarized, but Georgia Dream and most of the opposition parties are remarkably unanimous in their ideology. They all believe in technocratic, neoliberal, depoliticized governance in which policies are designed by foreign experts drawing on supposedly objective data and technology. The more public services that can be given over to the market, the better. Sound familiar? We've been going this for the last 40 years in the U.S. How's it working out for us? Boy, we sure are doing better than we were in the 70s, aren't we? I don't think we saw homeless laying all over the streets in the 70s. That's what neoliberal economics does. So now the U.S. is pushing it on the whole world. This is illustrated by the fate of the Liberty Act, landmark legislation that prohibits tax rate increases and progressive taxation and caps government spending at 30% of GDP. It was enacted by Saakashvili, but has not been repealed in 12 years of the Georgian Dream rule. And Transparency International Georgia, the most implacable of the partisan NGOs leading the protest against the Georgian Dream, has campaigned to keep it. Those political camps may fight tooth and nail over who gets to run the country, but then they all run it in the same way. The continued outsourcing of policymaking, governments, and service provision to foreign aid donors, local NGOs, and the market suits the tastes of Georgia Dream's leading cadres. Many of them studied in the West, typically law or public administration, on Western scholarships, and started their careers in UN offices, bilateral agencies, and yes, local NGOs. They are drawn from the NGO professional managerial industry, which functions as the largest social lift into the middle class, more accurately, the top 10%, in a country where academia, medicine, law, science, or entrepreneurship do not afford middle class status or lifestyles. Georgian Dream's leaders' resumes are much the same as those of their fiercest opponents in the foreign finance NGO sector. In this ecosystem, it is rare to find someone who genuinely cares about people and their well-being. The local NGO landscape is a deeply competitive sector that incentivizes sharp elbows, self-promotion, and duplication rather than collaboration, let alone solidarity. For many industry professionals, working in an NGO is a fast track to high incomes, perks like foreign travel and embassy receptions, and being part of the elite. If the Georgia Dream is all for technocratic, depoliticized, donor-driven, erstwhile government and maintaining the large foreign-funded NGO sector it requires, why would it risk protests at home and pressure from the EU and US to pass a so-called foreign agent law? Because atop that massive problem at the heart of Georgia's political economy sits another, much more limited problem, which is a major irritant to the Georgian Dream. A small but powerful clique of NGOs with annual budgets of up to millions of dollars or euros from foreign donors, some of them close to the previous government of Mikhail Saakashvili's United National Movement, who use their perch to engage in openly partisan politics. For some 5 years, they've been denying the government's legitimacy and calling for its ouster, and not just by supporting the opposition in elections, which already crosses ethical red lines for non-governmental organizations, and even more so when they're funded by foreign states, they agitate for a revolutionary change of power outside democratic constitutional processes. Previously, they demanded to be put in power as a technical government, but since no one, certainly not the Georgian electorate, picked them up on that offer, they have been venturing into street protests and storming parliament and government buildings. For good measure, they lobbied the EU and US to sanction Georgian dream leaders or slap travel bans on them. Georgia's foreign agent law, first tabled in spring 2023 and in its 2.0 version renamed the Law on Foreign Influence, aims squarely at this hyper-partisan cluster of well-funded NGOs. Never mind that this law would impose financial transparency on NGOs while the corporate sector faces no such obligations. This law won't restore Georgians' sovereignty, not in any meaningful sense of repowering citizens and repoliticizing policy makings. And for all that trouble, it probably won't deflate the partisan NGOs or moderate their conduct. The most cynical and dangerous game, however, is tying this law to Georgia's EU accession process. Faraway Western observers get teary-eyed about Georgians standing up for their vibrant civil society, but on the ground, protesters say, unprompted, that they are not in streets to defend NGOs, and indeed do not much care about them. These vox pop impressions are backed up by years of polls showing Georgians' low trust in NGOs. Instead, people take to the streets because they have been told that this is a make-or-break moment for Georgia's future in the EU. So all those protesters you see out there protesting transparency aren't really protesting transparency. They want to go to the EU because what they want is the Schengen movement, right? Where they can go travel to Paris and as if they had money to travel to Paris, right? But that's their belief. It's the same as Ukraine. Oh yeah, we're dirt poor, but we want to go to EU and live the good life. Then they go to the EU once they get that passport and they end up in brothels in Germany or picking potatoes in France or Germany. It's not the great life they envision, but you know what? The people in Georgia don't know that. They're like, oh yeah, we see how they live. They have yachts and they eat caviar and they have big parties and it's lots of fun and that's what we want. So they're out there in the streets protesting it at the bidding of the NGOs who don't want to be held accountable for all the money they're dumping into these things to take over the country. They don't want transparency. All that talk about open society, what a farce. Open society means transparent, doesn't it? Oh, no, it doesn't. No, it means we want you to open your society to us so we can take over it and use it to fund Western imperialism. Georgia's aspiration for EU membership is the rawest of all nerves in Georgian politics and culture. After 3 decades of post-Soviet impoverishment, of lives cut short, pain and trauma, chronic stress, insecurity, and humiliation, the idea of EU membership has become a project for many Ukrainians. It represents the promise of salvation after long and unjust suffering and sacrifice. Really, right after the Soviet Union was destroyed, they took polls and 80-90% of the people of the former Soviet republics looked at their new lives under neoliberal capitalism and went, no, we want to go back. We want to go back to the Soviet Union. But now, 30 years later, 34 years later, there's a whole couple new generations and all they want to be rich, just like everyone in the EU. Mm-hmm. Sure. The EU stands not just for dreams of material well-being, safety, dignity, comfort coming true, but for recognition of Georgians' inherent Europeanness, their specialness, their cultural superiority compared to their Asian neighbors. Then again, many Georgians out in the street with their EU flags have less metaphysical and rather earthier concerns. In recent surveys, Georgians rank the opportunity to immigrate as their number one reason for wanting to join the EU. Indeed, Georgians have been voting with their feet. In 2021 and 2022 alone, more than 5% of the population left, most of them into grim shadow labor markets in Europe. But whether it's spiritual redemption or scarce material opportunities, the prospect of EU membership represents something existential for Georgians. This has allowed the opposition, its partisan NGO proxies, and their Western donors to manufacture the foreign influence law crisis into a desperate, epic battle for Georgians' bright future. Worse, and most irresponsibly, EU officials have joined in, repeating one after the other that such a law is incompatible with EU norms and values. Norms and values is conveniently vague, unlike actual EU laws, which do not permit regulations of NGO funding. Most recently, an EU spokesperson has added that adoption of the law would go against EU's values and expectations, moving the goalposts into the ever more nebulous territory. The supposedly objective and meritocratic EU accession process has turned arbitrary and vexatious. And Georgians should look at Ukrainians. Ukrainians went through that whole thing in 2014. It's now 10 years later. Are they in the EU? They were promised EU membership too. That's why they all got out on the streets in 2013, 2014, and, you know, pitched their tents and yelled about freedom and democracy. And they overthrew the government, and the U.S. came in and replaced their government. And did they get into the EU? No. So why can't Georgians look at Ukraine and go, yeah, I think they're lying to us? Well, same reason the Ukrainians, a lot of them, still think they're going to be in the EU. If only we can get rid of the Russians, who've only been there for 2 out of the 10 years. So what about the other 8 years, Ukrainians? Why weren't you in the EU then? Yeah, too bad, too hard to think. I'm just saying this is a lot of, they're being played, and it's really sad. But that's the end of Occupy the Airwaves. See you next week.